And welcome back, everyone. If you're tuning in now, you have missed one whale of a show on GERD. Aaron's not even paying attention over there. She's zoned out. Not even a reaction when I said whale of a show. We've been talking about GERD. We've been talking about the use of proton pump inhibitors and how, you know, the dangers of proton pump inhibitors and using them long term. There are things that can be done without medication. We were talking about those before the break, taking things like bitter herbs, utilizing things like hydrochloric acid to increase digestion, and avoiding water while drinking. And another one that can be done is to treat bacterial overgrowth, testing and figuring out if you have bacterial overgrowth in your gut is important, and then treating that and taking care of that can be a huge deal, because the bacterial overgrowth or even like SIBO, right? Those things can cause the foods and things to ferment, and that increases gas, which increases intra-abdominal pressure, which we said before in the show, that's what opens up the lower esophageal sphincter, allowing for food to regurgitate back in. So all of these things, you know, make a difference when we're talking about, you know, getting rid of the bacterial overgrowth and helping your gut bacteria be in balance the way they should be. That's a big step. And along those same lines, things like probiotics can be beneficial. Now, we do see this fairly regularly, where people who have GERD will take a probiotic and say, "I took probiotics and it made my problems worse." That happens too. It really, truly does. So if you're in that population, you're going to need help from a functional medicine practitioner to help you get rid of the issues that you have going on, and then repopulate with the probiotics. Sometimes we found that adding probiotics into a gut that's not ready to have probiotics put into it can be an issue. You know, we want to remove and repair things before we start repopulating. When we're talking about the R's of gut healing, we've got to get rid of the problems. And, you know, if bacterial overgrowth is a problem, that's something that needs to be taken care of first before we start putting probiotics back in. And then there's another bug called H. pylori. H. pylori, about 50% of the population has H. pylori in their GI tract on a too high of level, right? H. pylori is a common normal thing, but it can get out of control in certain people, and it's inversely associated with GERD in a lot of studies, mainly because of its acid suppressing effect, right? So there's a lot of stuff in taking care of H. pylori. There's different ways to go about it, but identifying whether or not H. pylori is present is the first step in the chain. And again, this kind of goes with, you know, bacterial overgrowth, and you know, having your gut bacteria in balance the way that they're supposed to be. Next, another thing that can be very beneficial is consuming a low carbohydrate diet. I am a fan of low carbohydrate diets. I think they're great and they have their place. Are they for everyone? No, not at all. But if you're dealing with GERD and it's something that you have not tried, it can be very beneficial.
And a lot of people dealing with GERD are eating way too many carbohydrates.
Correct.
And that's what we see a lot of times. And that's why, you know, reducing your carb intake can make a big difference.
Right. Now, I'm not saying, you know, you have to take all of your carbs out, but yeah, like Aaron said, just significantly reducing your carbs. When people realize that how much carbohydrate they're actually eating, it's eye-opening. Taking a food journal and actually paying attention to what you consume. Most people have no idea. You ask them what they had 2 days ago for meals, and they draw blank. They're like, I don't know what I ate. And I mean, that's just common. So we have to write this stuff down and keep track of it, and decrease our carbs can be a huge piece of this, especially if we're, you know, increasing our fats and protein intake. Another one that I want to talk about, there's so many. I want to touch on healing the gut lining. Different areas of our gut require different things to heal. Things like stress in your life can damage the gut lining. Things that we're eating damage the gut lining. Having our bacteria not in balance can damage our gut lining. Having GERD, that's damaging our gut lining. There are things that are going on. We need to heal our gut as best we can. One way that we can do this is utilizing something like a bone broth. I'm a fan. There are bone broth, you know, powders and things out there. You can go to the store. Most stores carry some form of bone broth. You can make your own bone broth at home. There are hundreds of thousands of recipes, I'm sure, online, because everybody and their brother is making some sort of bone broth recipe, right? But there's a lot of collagen and gelatin in there, which is helpful for people with ulcers. There's also glutamine and proline, which help heal the gut lining. And another thing is using products, a product like deglycerinated licorice or DGL, that can help, you know, short term, it can help any ulcers heal up and protect our stomach lining. These are all very beneficial things that we can do to heal our gut lining. And another one is removing offending foods. We talk about this on the show a lot, food sensitivities. I think food sensitivities are a huge piece of people's health. And figuring out what foods you're not supposed to be eating and eliminating those foods can help us a ton. Because if you're eating a food that's just causing inflammation and causing a gut problem, until you identify what that is, there's no way to know. You're just guessing otherwise. So test for it, figure out what it is, remove those things. It's a very big step in helping to heal a gut. And lastly, there are things, you know, some people have, you know, still have GERD. They've tried all these things. Some other things that can be very beneficial, simply losing weight, right? Exercise, clean up the diet, do things that you need to do. You may need a little help from a functional medicine practitioner to help you lose weight, to figure out what's going on, why you can't lose weight. Are your hormones out of balance? Are you full of toxins like phthalates and PCBs and BPA and all this stuff? Do you have toxic metals in your system? Figuring out what that is, get that out of the system so your body can function the way it's supposed to and lose weight. Stay away from fructose, which is fruit sugar. Stay away from artificial sweeteners. That's another big piece of this puzzle. A lot of people don't realize how damaging artificial sweeteners can be on the microbiome. Avoiding NSAIDs, staying away from, you know, these painkillers, these non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, because they can damage the gut lining even further, which makes it even harder to heal. And I mean, they sell NSAIDs in the store. You know, you can buy pills at Target of 1,000. I mean,
right.
Who's buying 1,000? I haven't taken 1,000 pain meds in my entire life. It's just insane. So those are some big pieces of that puzzle. But really, you know, focusing in on gut health, what we can. I mean, there's so many things that can be done to help our gut. You know. And heal. You know, one of the big things is try not to be discouraged. All right. So many people get discouraged and they're like, well, everything I try, I still have heartburn. I'm not getting any better. Don't give up.
Right. And that's really why that's when a functional medicine practitioner can really help. And, you know, we're trying to give you some tips today that you can do on your own. If you have questions about things that we talked about today, about, you know, especially the things that we said, hey, try this on your own, certainly let us know. We've gotten a lot of feedback, like you said, on the last GERD show that we did, and also just in general, a lot of questions about it. But now that we've given you some tips, if anything was not clear, or you have questions about how to apply it to your own life, certainly let us know. And if you're still having problems, go and see a qualified functional medicine practitioner.
Yeah, it's not as hard. Sometimes people, we get in our own way when we're trying to heal, and we're adamant that it has to be a certain way, and this is how we're going to heal. And we basically, I explain it as we're putting blinders on. There's a lot of different ways, and sometimes just having, you know, a professional help you with this takes the blinders off and puts the pressure on someone else. And then you're able to say, oh, these are the things that I can do. And it's really that easy. So that's about all the time we've got for today. If you want more information, please call us 314-293-8123. Visit our website, theinstituteofnaturalhealth.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram. We're constantly putting information out there. For Aaron, I'm Dr. TJ. This has been Wellness One. Thanks for listening.
Wellness One has been brought to you by the Institute of Natural Health, your destination for functional medicine in St. Louis. For more information, visit them online at theinstituteofnaturalhealth.com or by phone 314-293-8123.
And welcome back, everyone. If you're just tuning in, today we're talking about GERD. We've been kind of going through the doom and gloom of GERD and the proton pump inhibitors that are used as a big class of medication to help people that are suffering with GERD, so-called help people. In the long run, it's very detrimental. And, you know, I wanted to, at this point, I want to highlight a few of the health concerns that come with taking long-term PPIs. They're just not good for us at all. I mean, if you read the fine print, if you find a commercial for one and read the fine print on the commercial, it actually says on there, do not take longer than 2 weeks. Right? It says on there, and we have people that are taking this for 20 years. Originally, they said, I think originally it was like 6 to 8 weeks, but they've lessened it. It's even shorter now. And I mean, I don't know anyone that's taking a PPI that has been on it for shorter than 2 weeks.
Nope.
It just doesn't happen. People are taking this stuff like candy. And let me, people look at me like, well, I don't take that very often, but I do take Tums every day, or I take Rolaids every day, or whatever other antacid medication they're trying to take. But this is important information. The FDA has put out several different warnings about long-term risks associated with PPIs. Things like bone fractures, infections. These are things that they've thrown on the label, right? I mean, it's pretty crazy. With the bone fractures, that happened back in 2010. They changed the label to put bone fractures as a possible risk. They affect how the body absorbs calcium and or inhibiting bone reabsorption. So our body's supposed to resorb bone. We're constantly making new and churning up and eating up the old. That's what we're supposed to be doing. And it's changing us being able to reabsorb the old unhealthy bone, the stuff that we need to clean up and put new healthy bone there, right? I mean, that's extremely important for bone health in the long term, right? So once they did that label change, they even had more long-term large analysis studies that found associations between proton pump inhibitors and fractures. We've seen it in our office. People that have, you know, crazy fractures and are like, how long have you been on that proton pump inhibitor? And we try to start putting connecting the dots for them, like, your bones are unhealthy now because you're taking this proton pump inhibitor. Another one is cardiovascular events. There are a lot of studies from other countries that show that proton pump inhibitors are independent risk factors for heart attack, right? Independent risk factors for heart attack. Another one is cognitive decline. Proton pump inhibitors have people that are taking them have higher risks for dementia, have a higher risk for Alzheimer's disease, and just general cognitive impairment compared to people not using the drugs. So, I mean, it just makes perfect sense. All of these things are chronic health or chronic disease state problems. Of course you're going to have chronic issues if you're changing how well your body can absorb vitamins and minerals and fats and proteins and carbohydrates. If you're not absorbing your food the way that you're supposed to because you're doing something to alter that, you know, mechanism, of course you're going to have problems, right? It's just mind-boggling. And then there's a lot of other things, a lot of other health issues. I mean, we could go on and on and on about all the health issues, but the people have liver problems, people come up with stomach cancer, people have asthma, end up with celiac disease. I mean, there's just a huge list of issues that come with taking proton pump inhibitors, and there's a better way. There are things that we can do without the use of medications to help GERD and the problems associated with it, right? There are a lot of different ways. Now, some of this stuff you can try on your own. Some people have some success with this stuff, and you know, this is the free information. We're trying to get this information out to you. But I also encourage you to find a functional medicine practitioner, someone who's certified to do functional medicine, you know, that you know has the education, has the background, someone who is taking care of this. Some people in functional medicine, they don't do everything. They just do a small portion, right? So finding someone that can help you is extremely important.
Right. And we're going to try to go over some of the things, you know, the basic things that you can do on your own, because we do have a lot of people who come into the clinic and with simple fixes, they're able to get rid of that. And if that can be done, that's why we're doing this radio show. Then you don't need to come in and see us if you're able to do these small fixes. And there are quite a few people who are listening who are going to be able to do that.
Right.
You know, with these simple changes to your lifestyle, you're going to be able to eliminate GERD, which is awesome, right? Because you won't have to go and see someone. We're just saying if you are having issues still, then it's time to actually go in and let's get a course of action specifically tailored for you to eliminate it without the use of medication.
Right. So one of the first things that a lot of people do, because they'll go online and they'll read too, and we understand this, is try to increase their own hydrochloric acid levels. And one of the easiest ways to go about doing this is utilizing a product that contains something like called betaine HCl or betaine hydrochloride. Now, this is something that you have to be very careful with. Not all digestive enzymes are created equal. Some are better than others, and some are stronger than others. And you know, while a lot of them, a standard dose is 650 milligrams, that may be too much for some people. You may need to start with a smaller dose, and you may have to search a little bit to find some products out there that maybe have 100 or 150 milligrams.
There are others who will take one and won't see any improvement.
Exactly. And then there are some people that will take 650 milligrams and won't notice anything at all, and they'll increase their dosage until they see a difference and notice that their symptomatology goes away. Now, one of the drawbacks of doing this is you can put too much acid in your stomach and give yourself GERD by doing so. So if you're going to do this, as much as it pains me to say, I encourage you to have something like a Tums or a Rolaids around just in case you give yourself heartburn, you can put the fire out. I completely understand. It's counterintuitive. Why would TJ ever say anything like this as a functional medicine practice? He's not into that. I completely get that. But even in our practice, when we're helping people walk through, we don't know what their tolerance is going to be. And it's one of those things where I would rather be safe than sorry. If you've had GERD for a long time, but by the time people get to us, they've had it for years, right? Taking one dose of Tums isn't the end of the world for you. It's figuring out what your dose is and why it's important to figure out your doses so then we can improve you long term. I don't care about the one dose. So you just be careful and be cautious when utilizing a betaine hydrochloride.
Also, I just want to point out that you know, the reason why, you know, you say like Tums or Rolaids have it on hand is because it is a good emergency medication. If something,
sure.
If you have, you know, too much stomach acid, we're just saying that that's not usually what's causing GERD and you need to figure out, and it's definitely not supposed to be a long-term use. But like most medications, it's not bad if you use it once, you know, in a very, you know, long time. It will give you the results that you're after. So it's not like, you know, one dose is going to, you know, ruin you forever.
Right.
But we need to avoid taking them long term.
Right. Some other things that you can do is try things like bitter herbs. You know, I'm not the biggest herb advocate. I think that there are a lot of herbs that have interactions, and we have so many people on medications in this country that sometimes I think when we go willy-nilly with herbs, we can create some unwanted interactions. So I'm very careful with that. Bitter herbs, though, typically if they're found in a digestive product, a digestive enzyme blend, we're not taking them in such quantity that we're as likely to create any kind of side effects or things. But like examples of these bitter herbs would be things like barberry bark, caraway, dandelion, fennel, ginger. Ginger's a big one. Globe artichoke, golden seal, hops, milk thistle's another one, peppermint. These are all bitter herbs that they're not necessarily going to help with nutrient absorption the same way that hydrochloric acid will. So if you're going to do this, this is better for someone who hasn't taken a proton pump inhibitor, a PPI, for a long term or hasn't even started taking them yet. This is more, you know, for someone who's you know, just in the very beginning stages of dealing with GERD and hasn't gone on to the next step and taken the more potent medications. Another simple step that you can do is avoid drinking water while eating. It's thought that by some, and I don't know, you know, it depends on who you ask, what side of the fence people fall on with this. Some people think that, you know, you should not drink water while you eat because that that can decrease in the concentration of stomach juices. Other people say, no, you can have water while you eat. I tend to tell people that if they're having GERD, to stay away from water while eating. You drink a little water before, maybe drink a little water after, but while eating, not drink less, or don't drink any water at all. So we're not, you know, the objective is to not dilute the stomach acid any further than we are. And then we've got to take a break. So when we come back, we're going to talk about other things like taking care of bacterial overgrowth, why probiotics can be beneficial, and we're going to talk a little more even about things like H. pylori. You're listening to Wellness One.
You're listening to Wellness One, brought to you by the Institute of Natural Health. For more information, visit them online at theinstituteofnaturalhealth.com or by phone 314-293-8123.
And welcome back, everyone. If you're just tuning in, today we're talking about GERD, and we're going to get into how we can work with GERD to help you not rely on a medication to decrease your symptoms and even decrease GERD completely. Before the break, I went through like how we're supposed to digest food and what the pH is supposed to be from the stomach moving into the small intestine. And we're going to transition now into talking like about what actually is going on with GERD. And I said right before the break, one of the problems with this is you have an increase in intra-abdominal pressure. So what are things that, what are we talking about? We're talking about an increase in pressure inside the abdomen, right? And so when this happens, we have this increased pressure. Things that cause this increased pressure would be if we overeat, right? Very common thing. In this country anyway. Obesity causes it because we have more stuff, more fat and things like that in our abdominal cavity. Bending over after eating. I can't tell you how many times I've been at a restaurant, looked at people eating and how they're hunched over their food and they kind of eat like they're the Hunchback of Notre Dame, just, you know, shoveling food in and they're all hunched over and they're not sitting up nice and tall like they should be.
That especially happens if you aren't eating at a table.
Yes.
We see that a lot. A lot of times when we talk to patients and discuss this with them, that happens if you're eating on the couch,
right,
or something, because that puts you in a position where you're going to be hunched over.
Right. That's exactly right. And then another one is if you just lie down right after eating, that can be a problem too. And what happens with that is as that intra-abdominal pressure goes up, there's a little sphincter, a little valve that it's not a valve, it's a sphincter. It's a group of muscles at the, excuse me, between the esophagus and the stomach. It's called the lower esophageal sphincter. When our intra-abdominal pressure goes up, that lower esophageal sphincter will open. When that opens, that's the floodgate. That's allowing things to get pushed back up into the esophagus, creating our symptoms of heartburn. This is what GERD is, the gastroesophageal reflux. We're putting stuff from the stomach, gastro, into the esophagus, and that's our reflux. So this is why it's really important for us to pay attention to, you know, our position and what we're doing while we're eating, right? I recommend even to our patients after they eat, stand up and take a 5 or 10 minute walk.
Right.
Right. Those are things that are easy things that can be done. And there are a lot of people that they say, well, that was genius. That helped a ton.
That'll be it. Or just make sure that you eat at a table and don't get on your computer right afterwards, because that's another reason why people will start hunching over right after they eat. So just being more aware of it a lot of times can give you a lot of relief.
Right. So stomach acid is extremely important for us, right? And we can have malabsorption, like I said before the last break, we can have malabsorption if our stomach acid doesn't get low enough. I mean, we can not absorb our carbohydrates the way that we're supposed to, which can cause us to increase intra-abdominal pressure, right? Which is the reason we're having a absorption problem in the first place, right? So you know, low stomach acid levels help us. They, or low pH levels. Low stomach acid is a problem. Low stomach acid causes a malabsorption of carbs, and it can cause a bacterial overgrowth. There are a lot of people that come to us and think they have symptoms of like a candida overgrowth or small intestinal bowel overgrowth or bacterial overgrowth, and they're trying to figure all this stuff out, and we realize, well, wait, you're taking an antacid medication, and of course you're going to have all of these downstream problems because you're changing the pH in the one of the very first steps of the digestive process where we want to have as much acid as we possibly can breaking this stuff down.
Right. It's kind of a lot of times that the, you know, starting to take a PPI, especially over the counter, is what it starts this cascade of problems. And
right.
So then people will come to us a lot of times a year or two, you know, down the road or even farther, where they have all these other problems that we can kind of trace back to the fact that, yeah, they, you know, they had some heartburn, started taking a PPI, and now all of these other things have followed suit after they messed up the way that their body naturally wants to function.
Right. So the stomach acid helps us absorb and, well, it helps us break down so we can absorb macro and micronutrients. And for those of you out there who aren't familiar with those terms, macronutrients are things like fats, carbohydrates, protein. Micronutrients being things like vitamins and minerals. That's what we're talking about when we're talking about macros and micros. And so the stomach acid actually causes our pancreas to release pancreatic enzymes into the small intestine and bile, so we're able to metabolize our carbohydrates and fats, and you know, the stomach acid is what breaks down our proteins. And so if we don't have enough acid, there's no possible way that we're going to be able to digest our carbohydrates the way that we're supposed to. There's no possible way that we're going to break down our fats the way that we're supposed to. And we obviously aren't going to digest our proteins the way that we're supposed to. And so all of these things, if we don't digest this thing properly, it leads to gas. And that's a very common symptom. It's something that we ask about a lot. Do you have gas? And people will look at us and be like, oh, yes, a lot, tons.
Or they'll say, well, yeah, but everybody has gas.
Yeah.
I mean, we get that a lot where we're just like, okay, actually, you know, no, if you think you have gas, it's different. You know, not everybody's experiencing that.
Right. Right. That's exactly true. But how do these acid blockers work? I'm going to touch briefly on that so everyone's on the same page. So these proton pump inhibitors are basically causing the cells of our stomach that secrete this stuff, the proton pumps or the hydrogen, it's stopping them from secreting the hydrogen. So when that happens, our body doesn't have as much hydrochloric acid. And so the pH of our stomach goes up. Right? That's what is going on. And so we're inhibiting the pump. It's actually a potassium, a proton potassium pump is what's pumping out the hydrochloric, the hydrogen ions that are going to be used to form the hydrochloric acid. And so these medications stop that from taking place. So we don't pump out the hydrogen. So our stomach acid levels rise or go down. Our acid levels go down, our pH goes up, right? So when that happens, again, we have all kinds of problems. Stomach acid, one of the things that stomach acid does is it helps to kill off infections. It kills off parasites and bugs that we consume in our food or that we come into contact with. Acid kills all kinds of bugs. It's one of our very first lines of defense is making sure that our stomach acid is low enough to kill off any bugs and parasites that may be present in our food. And if our acid levels in our stomach are higher and our you know, we don't have the ability to kill those bugs, we're at more risk of having yeast overgrowth or having an H. pylori overgrowth or having, you know, who knows what else bug that we have. We just run the risk of that being a bigger problem. And so then with this going on and these medications disrupting these big things, like disrupting our ability to digest fats, proteins, and carbohydrates and affecting our ability to break down and be able to absorb our vitamins and minerals, that's going to have a huge impact on our entire body. And everything that we do. I mean, we have to have these vitamins and minerals and proteins and fats and carbs to function, right? And so we're talking about serious long-term health consequences by altering our digestion at the very start.
Right. And that's one of the reasons why a lot of times when people start on a PPI, they will eventually be put on medication after medication because it, you know, I mean, if you're not getting vitamins and nutrients into your body, you're not going to be able to function. You know, your body isn't going to be able to function how it's supposed to, which is going to cause other problems. And when you go to a conventional medical doctor, you will generally then get a prescription to deal with, you know, those new symptoms. And that just keeps happening and happening. Another thing I wanted to bring up, because I know that we have seen this recently, actually with a family member of mine, is that if you take these on a continuous basis, you're at a high risk of polyps.
Yes.
Because your, what is it, your stomach or your colon mm-hmm. are trying to increase the surface area because it's wanting to absorb the
more stuff.
It's yeah. I mean, so it's like, well, okay, how we do that is through the lining, and we'll just make you
more
know,
tissue.
Polyps so that there's more lining. So I think that's really interesting to me because, like so many things we talk about on here, I think conventional medicine looks at the body like it's malfunctioning. When you really break it down, you're like, wow, your body is trying to fix the problem that you caused, right? It's doing
right.
exactly what is best for you. It's trying to get you to be able to absorb these nutrients. You just are putting a PPI in there that's stopping that from happening. So I just wanted to throw that in because there are major long-term effects digestive-wise as well.
Yeah, it's sad. So many people have been on these things for 10, 15, 20 years.
Well, the fact that they're over-the-counter makes people think that they aren't. They
that
aren't.
They're safe.
Yeah.
Right.
It's not a problem.
Right. All right. We got to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about how long someone should take a PPI and how that has changed over time. I want to also talk about some FDA warnings that are out there regarding long-term use of PPIs. And then hopefully we can start getting into things that you can do to help you if you're suffering with GERD. You're listening to Wellness One.
You're listening to Wellness One, brought to you by the Institute of Natural Health. For more information, visit them online at theinstituteofnaturalhealth.com or by phone 314-293-8123.
This is Wellness One, brought to you by the Institute of Natural Health, your home for common sense, science-based healthcare. Here's your host, Dr. TJ Williams.
Hey, and welcome to the show, everyone. I'm Dr. TJ. With me, as always, is Aaron.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good.
Awesome. So we have got a topic that we want to talk about today. Today we're going to talk about GERD, or gastroesophageal reflux disease. This is something that we get tons of emails on, lots of questions in the clinic.
Yeah, and I believe we've covered it to some extent before in
yeah,
other
we've
programs,
talked about it before.
But we're just going to try to break it down today. We're going to go over it again generally because it is so prevalent.
Yeah.
But then also talk about some ways that you can eliminate GERD without the use of medication because that's primarily what we do in our office. You know, well, we do that with everything, right? We try to
right.
eliminate, you know, try to treat without medications to the extent possible. And I think that GERD especially is one of those conditions that so many people are on medication for.
And people are able to self-medicate. Now that you have things like, you know, Prilosec and stuff like that that's over-the-counter, and people don't need a prescription. People are just going and buying this stuff on their own, not realizing the mechanisms behind what they're complaining about, not understanding anything about what's truly going on.
And not understanding the detriment that is caused by taking these protein pump inhibitors.
Proton pump inhibitors.
What did I say?
You said protein. it inhibits protein too, but that's a
Does
whole
it?
Different mechanism. It inhibits your ability to digest it, I can guarantee
just,
it.
I was just one step farther.
yeah. She was thinking ahead, ladies. I have to pull her back every now and again, ladies and gentlemen. So, GERD is just, it's one of those things. It's extremely prevalent. About 40% of the U.S. population of adults experience some sort of GERD at least once a month. And about 10% of the U.S. population actually takes a proton pump inhibitor for the condition. Now, there are different types of antacid medications. There's H2 blockers, which are hydrogen blockers. There are things like, you know, Tums and Rolaids, which are different types of antacids. In this show, we're going to mainly focus on the proton pump inhibitors, like your Prilosex and things like that. So, you know, they're starting to add to the list of side effects that happen when you're on proton pump inhibitors. But
lot of those side effects are that make it even more difficult to wean off of these medications.
Yes, they
do. So I think that's, you know, another reason why you really need to think twice before starting these. One is that it can cause problems just, you know, immediately. It's already going to be affecting your body. But secondly, it is going to make it even harder to stop taking them because it's affecting the way that your body naturally wants to function.
Right. And so the easy way to, rather than just reach for a PPI, is to actually heal the gut. Like, there's a lot of things that can be done that to help us heal our gut and improve our gut health where we don't even need the PPIs. And that's what we're trying to get to. I mean, GERD is the most common digestive disorder in America, right? I mean, we all know what this stuff is. It's when the quote acid in our stomach gets pushed back up into the esophagus, and our esophagus isn't supposed to have that level of acid in it, and so it's irritated. If we have this GERD that goes unchecked or we don't fix the issue, I mean, we're going to have complications and things from this. I mean, symptoms that you're going to have while, you know, if you're experiencing GERD, you're going to complain of heartburn. People will complain of regurgitation. They'll have difficulty swallowing. They might get laryngitis, may have a chronic cough, may end up with asthma. That's another one.
Yes.
And even dental erosions. Sometimes the regurgitation will come back up into the mouth a little bit, and that will just slowly but surely eat away at the teeth.
And I just want to take a step back here really quickly because GERD, like so many conditions that we talk about on this show, I want to make a point of saying that we're not at all trying to convey that this does not exist. GERD does. It is a problem. And I understand those of you who are suffering from it. You know, our goal is to give you some tools that you can use without medication to try to eliminate GERD, but we're not saying that it doesn't exist. Kind of like what we talked about with depression or fibromyalgia. Like, we're not at all trying to lessen what you're going through if you're experiencing this. We're just saying there's a different way to go about treating it, which means actually treating it and eliminating it, not just covering up the symptoms that it causes.
Right. And so the thing about it is, I mean, it, like I said, it is an extremely common condition, most common digestive disorder in the U.S. 40% of the symptoms are going on once a month. 20% of the population experiences them once a week. But the big thing that gets me is that $13 billion per year is spent on acid-stopping medications each and every single year.
Just
and the number
is
going up. Just by Americans.
Americans.
Yeah, just Americans. Right? In 2010, which, you know, some of this stuff, we've got to go back a little bit to get good data. The data is kind of, it's weird how data comes out, but we can go back and get solid data at 2010. I understand that that's, you know, 8 years ago. But we spent $5 billion alone.
Oh,
what's that?
It's actually 9 years ago.
Well, 9 years ago, but I mean, the data didn't come out in January of 2010. But omeprazole alone, $5 billion of that was on omeprazole alone, which is an extremely common medication for GERD. I mean, it's probably it's the one we see the most in our office is people being on omeprazole. But we understand that the symptoms are they're painful, right? But the health risks of taking the drugs are problematic as well. And so, you know, we're going to get into that in a bit, but it's just one of those things.
Well, and I think what's frustrating, I mean, especially on our end, is that people come in with symptoms that lead to a diagnosis of GERD, and they are then given a medication where the side effects of the medication are not generally discussed.
No.
And so they don't even realize that, well, first of all, they don't realize that there's any other way to get rid of those symptoms.
Right.
Right? I mean, they're in there with pain, with these other, you know, symptoms of GERD, and they're told, well, I mean, here is your option, you know, either suffer through it or take this medication. But then when they're given the medication, they're not told, hey, this could cause problems, you know, down the line, or
right.
actually immediately once you start taking them.
Right. So if you leave GERD alone, if GERD is, goes untreated, right, say you're one of the population, one of the people in the population that, that actually has this stuff going on, you could lead, this is going to lead to like scarring of the esophagus. You get constrictions of the esophagus. The esophagus can get ulcerations and eventually becomes Barrett's esophagus, which is a precancerous condition, which would then go to cancer of the esophagus. We understand that this is a big deal and we want to stop that, but there are much better ways. And we're going to just add some common sense to this in just a second of why I think we're going about this whole GERD and heartburn issue completely wrong, right? So again, I understand GERD's an issue, but right, let's talk about what causes it, right? So the current thinking and the reason why acid blocking medications and proton pump inhibitors are prescribed is because they're saying, well, there's too much acid in your stomach. All right. I can understand that too much hydrochloric acid in the esophagus is a problem. It's going to lead to those things that I just talked about, scarring and ulcerations and eventually cancer, you know, if left untreated.
Acid isn't supposed to be in your esophagus.
It's not supposed to be there. It's supposed to stay in your stomach. So when it goes up, when it goes up into the esophagus, something has happened, right? But rather than just trying to figure out why it's not staying in the stomach, we're throwing, which is what should be done, we're throwing pharmaceutical agents at this that have a whole host of side effects, right? So let's just talk about this whole stomach acid theory that they're operating on. So the esophagus or the stomach itself, when you're just sitting here normal, there's not a much going on. But when you eat food, your stomach will produce acid and it wants to produce acid at a pH level of about 1 to 2, right? Somewhere in that range, ideally closer to 1. And we're going to talk about why that stomach acid of 1 is important for things like fighting off infections in a bit. But you want that pH as low as possible. The stomach is supposed to be able to handle that. And then when the food moves from the stomach into the small intestines, it gets hit with these things called pancreatic juices and bile. And that change, those things are very basic. And if you remember that we're talking about pH here, with 14 being extremely basic, water is at 7, and acid is a pH of 1. This is a simple pH scale that everybody learned back in high school. So when you consume food and get it into the stomach, we're talking about a pH bath of about an acid bath of about 1. And then the food moves into the small intestine where it's hit with this buffer of pancreatic juices and bile to raise that pH of that food just above 7. When that happens, it's instantaneous raise. When that happens, the food causes a chemical release. This is where we release lots of nutrients and things, and this is where we absorb a lot of our nutrition. Well, if we're taking an acid-blocking medication, the pH in our stomach doesn't get anywhere near low enough. It may only get to 4 or 5. Well, that's enough to cause the pyloric sphincter to open. It causes gas to build up. We can create this intra-abdominal pressure to push this stuff back up. Now, a pH of 5 is still going to burn. It's going to burn the esophagus. It's not like we're taking this stuff back up to a pH of 7 like water. So we're disrupting this. Now this pH of 5 goes into the stomach and gets hit with this very basic solution, and the pH goes way higher than 7. And that's not good for us, and that's where we end up not getting our nutrients. We change how we absorb proteins, minerals, vitamins, fats. We change how we digest and absorb all this stuff, and we lead ourselves into nutrient deficiencies. We create this huge problem by taking an acid blocking medication. So it's not the right path. It's rarely that we have too much acid in our stomach to begin with. So We got to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about this and really get into what actually is going on and why someone has GERD. You're listening to Wellness One.
You're listening to Wellness One, brought to you by the Institute of Natural Health. For more information, visit them online at theinstituteofnaturalhealth.com or by phone 314-293-8123.